Hi, this is Rusty Turner, and I'm the host for the Know the News podcast. The agreement that allows citizens of the Marshall Islands to live and work in the United States expires in 2023. An estimated 15,000 Marshallese citizens live and work in Northwest Arkansas, mostly in and around Springdale, thanks to the provisions of that agreement called the Compact of Free Association. So what happens if that agreement is not renewed after 2023? And what are some of the issues that might prevent it from happening? Complicating matters are environmental crises endangering the impoverished nation of the Marshall Islands, including rising sea levels and potential leakage from nuclear waste sites left over from U.S. weapons testing programs in the 1940s and 50s. And then there's this, the strategic importance of the islands to U.S. defense and surveillance capabilities. We have a story about all of this coming in our Sunday edition of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and we're going to talk about it right now. Our reporter, Doug Thompson, has a story in Sunday's paper that will address these issues and what is and isn't being done about it in the U.S. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you.
And also joining me today is U.S. Representative Steve Womack from Arkansas's 3rd District. Most of the 15,000 Marshallese in Arkansas live and work in his district, and he's been working to get discussions going in Congress about renewing the Compact for Free Association. Congressman, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Rusty, Doug, it's always great to be with you.
All right, thank you. Doug, let's start with this. When we talk about the Marshall Islands, we're talking about a country with a relatively small population, but it covers a huge geographic area in the Western Pacific. Is that right?
That is correct. A huge, and not just a huge area, but a huge area that's importantly placed. We've got missile and missile defense testing sites there, and the congressman will talk more about that probably. But it covers an ocean, the area the size of South Dakota or Nebraska. The actual land area of the islands is not as big as the city of Fort Smith, or maybe slightly larger, about 70 square miles. I mean, it's just really a tiny wisp of land scattered on 1,500 islands, many of which are uninhabitable, all over the Pacific Ocean. It's a small country. It's only got as many people in it. The last census is, the next Marshallese census isn't quite done yet, but it's only got as many people as the town of Bentonville.
So roughly 50,000.
54,000 in the last census, but that's actually expected to fall because they're leaving because of some of the problems we're going to discuss today.
Mm-hmm. So, Congressman, could you talk a minute about the compact itself and why it's in place, and also why you think it's important to talk about it now in Congress as the expiration approaches?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, thanks for putting some light on this subject. This is not a subject that is widely understood or even known, for that matter, in Washington, D.C. And I would argue, too, that unless you've got some kind of connection, like you have a facility that employs a number of Marshallese, or in the community you spend time in some of the civic involvements that involve our Marshallese, that even people right under our nose in the 3rd District aren't truly aware of just how significant the Marshallese population is and what it brings to the table and why the compact that we're talking about is important. Now, just for a little bit of history, we did a lot of nuclear testing in that area of the Pacific Ocean. And the United Nations developed what is known as a trust territory out in that region of the world a long, long time ago, decades ago. And then sometime in the 80s, and I might get some of my dates wrong here, but sometime in the 80s, a compact of freely associated states was originated. And then in 2003, that compact was renewed on a 20-year period, the compact being an agreement, if you will, between the Marshall Islands, Palau, and Micronesia, as all the neighbors out there agree. And they're all sovereign territories, so they are not under someone else's thumb. But they agreed to certain military and economic conditions and agreements. And this compact has been in effect now for quite some time. But it expires in 2003. And because it's not a real sexy subject, it's slow. We've seen the administration very slow in trying to address it. Now, last month, there was some action, or at least some initial research or initial effort going into the renewal of the compact. But suffice it to say that it expires in 2003 and it needs to be renewed. Yeah. So that's one thing. Rusty and Doug, at kind of that 30,000 foot level.
Yeah,
this is a really important pact that we've been involved with the Compact of Freely Associated States, because one, we made a commitment a long time ago in exchange for some benefits, largely military benefits, that we were going to be true to our word and have these relationships. But in the last few years, unless you've been under a rock, you know that the emergence of China in the South, East China Sea, elsewhere in the Pacific, and the existential threat that it has on that region of the world and how important that region of the world is, that there is even more of a demand right now, which I think is kind of influencing the administration, more of a demand for us to renew these agreements. Because I will tell you, as a member of Congress and as somebody that studies a lot of the foreign policy issues affecting our country, certainly national security issues, that where we unplug and where we vacate, other more nefarious actors plug in. So I think it's important. And then, of course, in a really parochial sense, these 15,000 or so that you talk about that live in the 3rd District of Arkansas, these are our people. These people make a valuable contribution to our economy. Life would be difficult, particularly in a lot of key industries in our region, if the Marshallese population was not there, and they help drive our economy. And I think from just truly a representative standpoint, they need to have a voice, and we try to be that voice for them.
So, and just to be clear, the compact started, the current version of the compact started in 2003, expires in 2023. Is that right?
That is correct. Going to expire in less than 2 years, yeah. And it needs to be renewed. It needs to be renewed for a lengthy period of time so that we can take this piece of uncertainty off. Now, there are a lot of other issues that go along with the Marshallese situation in our region, in Hawaii. These are the two areas where the preponderance of Marshallese population is. And in fact, you know, the Springdale consulate is, I think, and I could be wrong, I think, the only consulate outside of Washington, D.C. in the lower 48. I think Hawaii's got a consulate in Honolulu, but there's only a dozen, maybe a little over a dozen consulates around the world, and we have one right here in Northwest Arkansas.
Right. So go ahead, Doug. You were going
to... I'm a bit of a history nerd attack here. I mean, the reason the United States ever got involved in the Marshall Islands is we conquered them in World War II. They were Japanese held, and they were Japanese held because Japan recognized that it was the way to Asia. The control of the Pacific hinged in large parts on these islands. So when we're talking about, you know, the strategic importance of these islands, yeah, they are. If you're going to be a power in the Pacific, you got to be able to get through the Marshalls. Anyway, that's pardon the history nerd attack.
No, that's all right. That's all right. And I also know Doug wrote some in his story that's coming Sunday about the hearing, Congressman, that you mentioned a month or so ago. You know, the Marshall Islands are facing some pretty significant crises on their own and really need some help from partners in the U.S. So, Doug, if you could talk just a minute about some of the issues with rising sea levels and that sort of thing going on in the Marshall Islands right now.
Look, the short version of this story is that the you can debate climate change all day long. You can debate whether it's causing it or not, but it's an indisputable mathematical fact that sea levels in the Marshall Islands have risen at twice the rate of sea level rise of the rest of the world. and that the 7.7 inches since 1993. Now you think, oh, that doesn't sound like a whole lot. Well, folks, the highest peak in the Marshall Islands is less than 35 feet high. That's one thing. Another thing, imagine an inch of seawater inside an atoll. I mean, not even counting the broader ocean outside. Inside an atoll, an inch of seawater is tons and tons of seawater, and it is affecting the waves. It's affecting the tides. It's rendering this tiny landmass, which, as I described, is just a little bit bigger than the city of Fort Smith. It's rendering them uninhabitable. And I listened in on that hearing because I knew Melissa Leland of Springdale was going to testify at it. And Congressman Womack, you introduced her.
I did.
And I'm sitting here thinking, well, I'm going to listen about the problems with Runnett Dome. Well, as I got into it, as I listened to this hearing, I realized that Runnett Dome is important, but just a list. I'm sorry, I didn't explain what Runnett Dome is.
Yeah, we need to get back to that. So
we set off the explosive equivalent of 1.7 Hiroshima bombs every day for 12 years. One nuclear test alone was 1,000 times. This was in 1954, was 1,000 times as powerful as the Hiroshima bomb. We then scraped a lot, not all, but a lot of the radioactive debris, including some plutonium, okay, into a bomb crater left by one of those bombs and covered it with a 18-inch thick, 377-foot wide concrete structure called Runnett Dome. Well, to exaggerate a little, I'll just stick with the facts. Rising sea levels, as the U.S. Department of Energy testified at that hearing, is causing seepage from underneath the dome. So the radiation is, to an extent we don't really know, getting out. But that's just one of the problems caused by these rising sea levels, along with rising temperatures and such as that.
So Congressman, you were at the hearing that this came up. What kind of factor will those kinds of things play in the discussions about renewing the compact?
Well, I think the most important factor is it helps shed a little light on the subject, because not everybody, in fact, very, very few people in the legislative body of the U.S. government really have any significant interest or purpose of interest, because they just don't understand it. Doug knows a lot more about it because he's done the research than even I do. But I have a much better working knowledge of the plight of the people in the compact. I have a much better appreciation for what they're going through. And I must say it's because I represent a pretty significant population from that area of the world. So we have to spend a lot of time paying attention to it. But I think what you're talking about here and what Doug has articulated is, yes, there are historical notes as to why we have any kind of a strategic or military interest in that area of the world. But what's happened since then and what is going on today is, and let's face it, the opportunities that present themselves in the USA and the fact that many of these Marshallese folks that have come to Northwest Arkansas have friends and family back at home, and I'm sure they share with them the benefits of living and pursuing that American dream. So a lot of them follow through. And where do they go? They go where they have familiarity, and that familiarity is largely with members of their families and friends that have located in our region. So that's what helps put a lot of attention on it. And fortunately, they have a member of Congress in Northwest Arkansas that understands it, spends time on it, and helps educate other members of the delegation and other members of Congress on those issues.
So, Congressman, what comes next in the discussion of the compact? What do you anticipate being the next step in keeping these discussions going and getting some more attention focused on the compact and the need to renew it?
I just think the education of the body politic and the pressure that will come to the administration. Up here in Washington, we usually don't get anything done until you know, the day before or the day of any kind of an expiration, if the budget and appropriations are any example, that this this compact is not the kind of thing that you can just wait to the last minute and then dot a few I's, cross a few T's, change the signature block and move on. So those negotiations, which I assume are largely at the State Department level, certainly in the administration level, will continue to mature here. And we will continue to do everything we can to remind the administration of the situation. And of course, we need our diplomatic partners as well involved in this process. So I just think the next step is continue to ring the bell and illustrate the issue and discuss with the administration, you know, the need to get this thing done sooner than later.
The congressman raises an important point. To January 2023 sounds like a long way off. It's not, okay? When you're negotiating a treaty, it requires, I mean, they haven't even, last time I checked, Congressman, correct me if I'm wrong, they hadn't even set up the protocols of when and where they're going to meet, what they're going to discuss,
I think that. I think the latest step in Hawaii was probably that first big step. Look, the purpose of this visit is not to pin blame or point fingers at administrations, but
right.
I will remind everybody on this call that the administration, the previous administration, had already initiated these efforts and had, I think for the first time in history, the three parties in Washington, D.C., before the end of that administration. So this has had the attention of the White House. The problem is the current White House has more or less hit the pause button, and I'm sure it's because they've got a lot of other things on their plate, not the least of which is, you know, the change in administration and trying to get people appointed into key positions and all of the other front burner issues, and of course the national security issues that we continue to face. But it needs to go, it needs to move, and it's not the kind of thing that can wait till the last minute.
At the end of that subcommittee meeting that we're talking about, it was the Oversight Subcommittee of Committee on Natural Resources.
Yeah. Which is a Bruce Westerman, you know, he is our ranking member on resources.
Yeah, of the delegation, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there watching it, and Katie Porter, or Representative Porter of whiteboard fame, famous liberal Democrat, is there, and another Republican on that committee is Representative Gosar of
Arizona. Paul Gosar from Arizona.
Yeah, Paul Gosar from Arizona, who's famously conservative. And at the end of it, Ms. Porter looked at the government witnesses and said, "Look, if I and Gosar agree on this..."
Speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, they were both, I think, Congressman, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's fair to say they and other members of the committee were angry at the lack of movement on this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As well they should. But again, and not to make excuses or give a pass to members, just understand, of course, resources is a very important committee, but, you know, it is not one of our profound A committees like a Ways and Means or an Appropriations or an Energy and Commerce and Financial Services that have a lot of, you know, life changing, life altering things coming out of it. But it's, you know, kind of behind the scenes out there. And I think they're doing a really, really good job of trying to bring a lot of the attention to these very important topics, and I credit them for that. But you're right, Doug. When you got a Katie Porter and you got a Paul Gosar that are on the singing off the same sheet of music, you need to capitalize on that. You need to embrace that, because that doesn't happen very often up here.
There you go.
There you go. Well, Congressman, we'll keep an eye on this story as it progresses, because whether folks around here know it or not, there's a significant impact locally, and certainly a significant from that 30,000 foot level, a significant impact on the nation of the Marshall Islands. So we'll keep a close eye on that, and we appreciate you spending some time with us. I know you made some time at the airport. You're on your way out of town for an enjoyable weekend, I understand.
Yeah, I'm headed up to New Jersey. The Army-Navy game will be played tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Central. in MetLife Stadium there in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Looking forward to it. I chair the board at West Point. I think this is my sixth or seventh year as chairman. I have a terrific relationship with the United States Military Academy. It's one of the more important things I think that I do, in addition to a lot of other duties. But West Point particularly, I consider to be one of the greatest leadership institutes on the planet. And, you know, as a football fan, and you don't have to really be a fan of the service academies necessarily to appreciate what will happen tomorrow, but it kind of stands on its own. It's the only college football game, you know, Division I that will be played tomorrow. It'll be on CBS television. But here's the thing about that game. I had somebody ask me yesterday, one of my colleagues, about what's your favorite part of it? And you know, Rusty and Doug, it's this. It's that tomorrow at 3:00, an Army football team, West Point, and the Navy football team, the Naval Academy, will go head-to-head, toe-to-toe, in a fierce battle for 4 quarters. I expect it to be a good, tight game. It is one of the great rivalries in America. But when the game is over, when the final whistle is blown and the victor is crowned, the two teams, side by side, will move quickly to the losing team's stands, where the Corps cadets or the brigade of midshipmen will be. And they will stand there at attention while they sing that academy's alma mater. Then as soon as the final notes on that alma mater are done, they'll sprint to the other end, to the victor's side, both Army and Navy. And they will stand while they sing the alma mater of the winning team's school. And this is what it tells me. It tells me that in America, maybe this is a great lesson for Congress, that in America, you can be fierce rivals and you can go toe-to-toe, head-to-head, and let the best man win. And when it's over, you can stand shoulder-to-shoulder and be one team again. And that's what our military does. It's what these academies will do tomorrow. I will tell you, for 60 minutes, though, it's going to be brutal. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be nasty. But I promise you this, after 60 minutes, assuming no overtime, that those two teams will be brothers in arms. And that ought to give everybody listening to this podcast a bit of a refreshing feeling about the future of our country. I just wish our Congress would take a page from this concept of what will happen at the end of that game tomorrow.
I think we can all agree with that, Congressman. That we could all use a little bit more of that kind of unity. So I do suspect, though, in that 60 minutes, you're going to be rooting for Army.
I'll be on the Army sideline.
There you go.
In fact, I've been asked several times, and assuming Superintendent Darrell Williams wants me to or grabs me, every time Army scores a touchdown, they go to the end zone with the cheerleaders and the superintendent and other high brass, and they do push-ups. For every point that is scored, they do these push-ups. So I did it during the Air Force game down in Dallas, and assuming the weather is permissible, it's supposed to be rainy tomorrow, that never stopped me. And assuming I don't have any other conflicts during the ball game, i.e. meetings with other dignitaries and that sort of thing, that perhaps in that end zone, you'll see this silver-haired guy in the lean, you know, the forward-leaning position, doing his best to pump out at least one or two, you know, textbook push-ups. I don't know that I could do many more than that, but we'll do our best to make them uniform and military in nature, and do our part to cheer on the Black Knights. So, thanks again for the opportunity to talk about it.
All right, thank you very much, Congressman. We appreciate you.
All right. Take care, all.
All right. And I'd like to remind everybody, Doug's story will appear Sunday in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Doug, thanks for being here and talking about this.
Glad to do it.
Of course, we'll have lots of other great content coming for you in our editions over the weekend. Remember, we're still collecting money for the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank through our community Christmas card program, and you can help relieve food insecurity in our region and send a holiday greeting to all your friends and neighbors at the same time All you have to do is click on the Community Christmas Card link on our website at nwaonline.com for details. In other stories, Fayetteville will be looking for an arts and culture director next year as the new arts corridor plan takes shape. Stacy Ryburn will have those details. Ever been stuck in traffic in Bentonville? Well, yeah, me too. Relief may be on the way, however. The city has contracted with an engineering firm to better time traffic signals and improve traffic flow. Mike Jones will tell us all about that. Haas Hall, the public charter school with campuses in the four major cities in northwest Arkansas, is now looking at expanding into the River Valley. The state's charter authorizing panel will take a look at the proposal next week, and we'll have a preview. Rising food costs and supply chain issues are affecting everyone, including public schools. Mary Jordan takes a look at how school districts are coping. The University of Arkansas at Fort Smith will offer a new diversity studies minor for students. Thomas Cicente will tell us how the program got started and what school officials hope it will accomplish. Monica Brick will update us on the River Valley Toys for Tots drive as folks in that area try to help kids have a happy holiday. Keep up with preparations for the Outback Bowl by the Arkansas Razorbacks football team at wholehogsports.com and check back with us all weekend for breaking news that you need to know. If you're not one of our subscribers, please consider supporting local journalism so we can keep telling the stories you want and need to hear. All you have to do is click on the subscribe button at nwaonline.com. And if you like this podcast, we're here every Friday. All you have to do is touch the subscribe button on your device to get a notification when this free podcast becomes available. Thank you for listening. My name is Rusty Turner. I'm the editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and I'm your host for Know the News. And we'll be back next week with another edition.